Late night with Travis.
All right, hello, good morning, good afternoon. No, that's just going to start again. I usually start a few times.
Yeah, this is cool. Go for it, Travis.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Late Nights with Travis and Los. This is another one of those episodes where it's not Travis and Los. Today, it's going to be early afternoons with Trav and Mai. Would you like to say hello to our listeners?
Hello, everyone.
Okay, so let me give a quick introduction to who I'm sitting across the table from. This is Mai. I work with Mai. We've met about a year ago. And Mai is one of those people that always has like that just like warm welcome smile. She's really nice, a nice person, always has something nice to say. And I've found her to be a great conversationalist. Mai, can you give us a really quick, a summary of your design story? You know, I want to know like how you got into design when you were young. How did you make your way to Google? Give me the dirt.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying all those nice things, Travis.
Sure.
You're a pleasure to talk to, too. I feel like we have very in-deep conversations all the time. So, but let's see. About me, who am I? I guess, how did I get started in design?
Did you say, who am I?
Who am I? Who am I? Yeah, who am I? Like, I can say it fast enough where where I have that name where it's like, my, right? but how did I get into design? I think, I got into design because of my mom. I remember... back in the days, right, where before people had access to, like the internet wasn't a thing, like maybe a few, like, select group people would know what the internet is and what it was used for. Like, this is, like, way before even, like, remember GeoCities and, Angel Fire?
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking, like, early 90s, mid-90s?
Yeah, like, early 90s. And I was one of those nerds who, like, jumped on the bandwagon. I was like, what? I can make stuff? And that's free and, like, having nothing to do is, like, really awesome.
Yes.
And I remember going to college and I started studying design, like graphic design specifically. And I was at home one day and I came home and I hadn't seen my mom for a while. And I was like, Mom, where are you? And as I'm walking in and trying to look for her, she was in her office and she's sitting there with this netbook, like with a touch screen. And she's like, I'm like, what are you doing, Mom? Like, like, what is Mom doing with technology, right? And she was like, oh, I'm online banking. And it just blew my mind that someone like my mom, who you would never expect to use technology, especially when no one else is using it, to be doing something so simple as banking online, right? And it kind of touched my heart because I kind of thought about like the Matrix architect, right? Where who is this person who thought to design something for everyone and not just for the elite like techie groups? And that drove me, that gave me a lot of passion to design for people like her, because our moms are our heroes in life, right?
That's really interesting that you can bring that down to one moment where you observe someone using technology, and then that's the kind of wellspring for your interest in technology. Let me ask you this question. How many times have you told that story?
Oh, man, a few times. Yeah. I've told it a few times.
It sounds like a story that you knew where to go with.
Yeah. No, well, you know, it's
which is not a bad, I'm not critiquing. I'm like, this sounds like she knows what she's talking about, where she's going.
Well, it's actually because of that, because I actually can pinpoint it to a moment. Like every time I tell the story, I walk through my head, walking through the home and like seeing my mom. Like I can actually picture it very clearly.
Okay.
And so every time I think about that, it gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling inside as to like all that. I feel like everyone I'm designing for is my mom. And so okay. I'm like, yeah, you're my mom. Of course I care about you.
And you were at college at the time.
And I was at college at the time, yeah. And it was, you know, I was wondering what I was going to do with this career, right? Because when you study graphic design, especially when I was doing the program, there was no web design, right? Like, if you wanted to do websites, you were in the computer science department learning how to code.
Right.
And the design department was focused around, like, print media.
Right. Yeah. Graphic design meant something entirely almost non-existent compared to what it is today.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Like if you say to somebody graphics, they're talking about like large wraps for trucks and things like that.
Yeah.
Like print shop.
And that's
like
what we're doing.
Not even like ads, but like print shop stuff. I was marveling at that because I used to label myself like, yeah, I'm a graphic designer. And now I can't say that because it means something entirely different.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
So how did you go from this moment, you know, watching your mom do online banking to sitting in the chair across the table from me.
Yeah, well, you know, when I graduated, I was
two
like...
Two very specific moments. Tell me everything in between.
It was like point A, point B, like nothing in between.
No,
right?
Just teleported.
I guess when I graduated, I was a little lost because I'm like, well, what am I going to do with this degree? Because my interest in going into the graphic arts was building websites. That's where I got started in high school. I did some internships building like websites for nonprofit groups.
Okay.
And because, you know, I just made, and there were just like GeoCity websites too, mm-hmm. like really, really simple
nice.
HTML. But when I graduated, I was like, well, what do I do with this? And like, what's a practical application of it, right?
I like that you asked that question after you graduate.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, I have this liberal arts degree now. What can I do? I went into graphic arts. I made graphics when I started my career for these video.
Did you design a car wrap or a truck wrap?
Like, no, not quite. Okay. I was actually really disappointed because I couldn't find, because that was like the elite jobs, right?
Really?
Like, yeah.
Oh, that was always the job I didn't want to do. I was like, I want to make a website.
Yeah. So I worked at this company called Pinnacle Avid.
Okay.
And they did video software.
Oh, cool.
And I started making like graphics for like their montage themes, right? So like think of like fun Valentine's, like hearts flying across the screen.
Oh, like motion graphics.
Motion graphics, yeah.
Like templates and things. Oh, wow.
That's right, yeah. And so like I did this and I loved it because it was kind of, I felt like it was the next iteration of like greeting cards, right?
Yeah.
And from there, I actually, my manager, I guess the UI designer, there was one UI designer because it was a small company,
mm-hmm.
and he quit and they needed someone to fill in. And my boss was just like, yeah, you can do it. And I was just like, okay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like a coincidence more or less. But was it the direction you wanted to go in?
It was.
Okay.
It was and it wasn't, right? Because I was having so much fun doing graphic art because
yeah.
When you come from a graphic design program, mm-hmm. like that is literally like print design. It is what you've been training to do in college, and
mm-hmm.
so you want to do it when you finish school. But since like the job I had, like there were like print jobs were far and few between.
Sure.
So you had to work at a big name agency to get like really great print jobs, and I wasn't really aware of this field called UI, even though I had done UI design in my internships in high school.
We called it graphic design. Everything
yeah,
was
yeah,
called.
Yeah, it was called graphic design.
Yeah,
right.
But it was UI.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's just being unaware of like what your options
yeah.
are available to you, especially since I didn't have a lot of connections
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know any professionals in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back, like I recommend anyone who's, you know, like in college or like has graduated, to just reach out to anybody, because I feel
yeah.
like in the field, like it's a really supportive field too. Like anyone will talk to you about like what your choices are.
Right.
And that's one of those pivotal things that I missed out on, is figuring out what my choices are.
I've recommended to new designers to not specify too early and to try a lot of things, because that's where you're gonna inform the choices that you make later
right.
on.
Right.
And maybe there's like a podcast that I can do another time around how to become a T-shaped creator. But I think that's a part of it, right? Like
yeah.
trying to vary your experience when you're young and flexible or mobile or,
yeah.
or something like that, where the cost is very low to try and fail. So here you are. How long have you been at Google, by the way?
So I've been here a little over a year.
A little over a year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the month? Because I started in November 2015.
Oh, I started the week before Thanksgiving, which is great.
Oh, like around the same time?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even realize that we were that close starting buddies. So I randomly sat down at your desk yesterday and I was talking to you about like, hey, what's going on? And you were putting together a presentation about presentations or about pitching. Or do you want to kind of give us an insight into why pitching is so critical for creatives?
Yeah. I was doing a pitch about how to give a pitch. And I was like, oh, okay, how do you pitch about giving a pitch? And I, ironically enough, used my outline on what is a pitch. And I put...
You followed it.
Yeah, I followed it. So it was quickly, you know, done. But I think the real importance about pitches is that we don't realize we pitch all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We pitch in life, every day, every decision you make, that you have to work with somebody else. You need to convince them why your idea is important or what it is that you want to do is important and worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like in doing that, having understanding like a format or like what are the pivotal key points that you need to express in a pitch is really important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to tell a compelling story.
Right, a story. Okay. So like what is the outline?
Oh.
Like what did you use yesterday to make your pitch?
Okay, so to make a pitch, I boiled down to like really eight simple steps, right? Pieces that you need to have in your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That would make it compelling. I always start off with an introduction, right?
Okay.
Talk about one line sentence about what it is. What is your idea?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to get across?
Mm-hmm.
And then I go into talking about who's involved in this, right? And I think that this is one of the most important parts that's quite overlooked is who are the team players with this? Who's required for this effort?
Okay.
And like what, like getting to know you as a person.
Does that include, I mean, are you talking about the assets that you're pitching to the audience, or are you saying consider the audience themselves? What do you mean? You said who's a part of this. What does that mean?
So this is the this is the structure of what you need to put in your pitch.
Okay, got
so
it.
So when I say that, that's the team. Mm. In so most of the time, especially what we do,
mm-hmm.
One person can't build a product. It's a whole team of people, right?
Yeah.
And the dynamic part about that is we each bring to the table a certain skill set. And if we can talk about like, okay, well, we have a designer on here. We have an engineer on here. We have like a researcher. It gives you more credibility to what you're saying and the story that you're crafting. So this is essentially building like that credibility, the
mm-hmm.
clout
mm-hmm.
Up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then really quickly, you need to state the ask, right? Especially when you're dealing with presenting to other people. Be very clear, like, why is it that you're here today? Why are we having this conversation? What are you trying to convince me
you
of?
You do that upfront.
Upfront, yeah. I do it upfront so that they know, like, as they listen to your story and they listen to key points that you're mentioning, they know what it is that they need to be looking for and be
right.
on alert for.
Okay, yeah. It's like a map of the forthcoming conversation.
That's right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, you're taking a road trip, but if someone just says, hey, Trav, hop in the car.
Yeah, go for it. Have fun.
Right.
Like, well, where are we going to go?
Right. You'll be kind of a little anxious like the whole time.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I think all conversations should have a roadmap before I get into it. You know, like I'm talking to my wife. She's like, so how was your day today? You know, I'm like, where's this going?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Not necessarily small talk like that, but like, you know, like, have you seen your children today? I'm like, what did they do?
Yeah, you're like, what am I supposed to like here, right?
Right.
So the next step after you talk about what the ask is going into the problem, right? Being mm-hmm. very clear and concise. If it's about a customer journey, you talk about who your customer is and what the problem they're experiencing is. Perhaps draw out like, you know, a diagram as to, you know, simplify, hey, this is the exact problem that we're trying to solve.
Right.
And of course, after you state the problem, you state the solution. What is your proposal? And then you go into like, you know, any details that you have. If you have like metrics, facts that can back up your point and your research to show that you've thought about this
mm-hmm.
Very deeply. So mm-hmm. they should trust what you're saying.
That's interesting. That does two things. Not only does it give them information on which to base their opinions, but it also demonstrates that you are competent in being given ownership over the potential problem yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think the whole point of a pitch actually is proving your competency,
okay.
right?
Yeah, like, that's a really good point.
Right. Because, I mean, there's no way you can, like, go into, like, a deep dive study and, like, do a brain dump of everything you know.
Mm.
So you're trying to convince people, hey, trust me on this one.
Right,
I know,
yeah.
right?
That's a really good way to think about it. Like, your goal is to prove competency and ask for trust and then, you know, to achieve whatever else is. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like geeking out on the pitch right now.
And then finally, I think another key piece I always include in any of my pitches are the pros and cons. More specifically, the cons too, right? So state your pros as to, you know, what's the upside of the solution that you're proposing?
Mm.
But at the same time, showing your awareness that, hey, I don't know everything, but I am aware of some problems that we haven't solved yet. So doing that actually, I find, helps buy you more trust from people because no solution is perfect.
Right. And you're demonstrating transparency.
That's right.
Which is so critical when they're trying to, when you're asking for trust.
That's right. Yeah. And then finally, like, what are your next steps? Like, okay, so you're here in this room, you're here talking about it. Show that you have foresight
mm-hmm.
about what needs to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is a callback to the original ask that you prepared them for in the beginning.
That's right. Yeah. So that leads into like the conversation as to, okay, well, I asked you, this is what I was asking at the beginning. So please keep that in mind.
Uh-huh.
And now it's time for us to circle back to see what your thoughts are about that.
Right. This is a really strong outline. Now I'm wondering how often it's, you know, followed. You know what I mean? Like I'm going through my mind in all of like the pitch meetings I've been in, and I'm like, one of the things that I don't see enough of, or at least if I do see it, it's not strong enough, is the ask.
Yeah.
Like people kind of just like end and then.
Yeah. Like awkward silence.
Waiting for, you know, like the gods of the pitch to like deliver a bolt of lightning out of the sky or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the most important part of it, right? Is especially when you're dealing with like clients who have very little time. And so their time is valuable. So be very upfront about it. And more often than not, like, I think ambiguity makes a much weaker like argument presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be direct.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's too aggressive, I think it's good to state what it is that you want.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the most critical pitching that all creatives will do is like their portfolio is a pitch deck. It really is. And I think, you know, going back to the idea of like, you know, what I don't see enough is strong asks.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see the same in like portfolios online or even like job interviews. People are more comfortable with sharing a gallery.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a very passive like presentation of like, oh, well, this is kind of who I am.
Right.
Do you like it?
Yeah. And it's not a design review. You're not sharing your working, asking for comments. Like, why are you showing all of these case studies? That's not what this is about.
Right.
What you outlined here is a strong narrative. It's an arc, right? You're starting with, this is who I am. This is, you know, maybe it's the team, maybe it's just me. Mm-hmm. This is the problem. Here are what you should pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, any good book or movie that you watch, in the first, you know, 10 minutes, they're going to lay these things out. Here's the characters.
Right.
Here are the problems. Here are the things you should pay attention to because they will come back later.
Right.
And then the story arc, right?
Right.
And then we're going to talk about the data. We're going to talk about the events. We're going to talk about that. And then coming back to the ask. And like, what would it look like if you were sharing your portfolio, air quotes, sharing a portfolio, but you were literally actually giving a pitch?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I sit through at least one interview a week.
Okay.
And so I see a lot of presentations and essentially like pitches, right? When you come in for an interview,
mm-hmm.
that is a pitch.
How like just like a number, how often do you see or what percentage of candidates use that opportunity as a pitch? And what percent of candidates are using it as an opportunity to share a gallery of work?
Mm-hmm. I think most people actually come in just to share their work.
Okay.
So that like... The idea of an interview is actually two-pronged, right?
It's, uh-huh.
I, as an interviewer, I want to see what your competency, like, what is it that you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can you do the job that we're looking for, to hire for? And also, who are you as a person? Like, how is your approach to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, two things, your work and who you are.
Right.
And so, I don't know about numbers, but a lot of candidates, you know, come in and show about... A lot of candidates come in and just show their work very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that the presentations that stand out to me the most are the ones who come in with the prepared presentation to talk about what their approach is and
right.
how they solve a problem and get really getting to know their methodology. And so usually within the first 5 minutes, you get a really strong understanding of who that candidate is. And it's generally like those candidates are very strong guesses.
Yeah, that's the insight that I'm looking for. That's really great. So I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about how many surfaces or contact points or opportunities a creative has to share their, you know, again, air quotes, portfolio/pitch, right? Your portfolio
right.
is your pitch.
That's right.
So how many surfaces or touch points do they have to share that? And like, you know, maybe you have like a Dribbble, or, you know, which is a gallery. Maybe you have like a Behance, the same thing. Maybe you, you know, writing articles on Medium, or, you know, sharing a little bit more in depth. But what is so critical about the structure that you've built is that there's that arc, and there's, and that it's a structured narrative where you're taking somebody on a journey, right? And that it ends with an ask or a goal or like a point of action at the end. And I think those two things. And then here's another one. And you talked about the structure of the pitch deck and of the pitch, but if you consider all of the pitches you've done, mm-hmm. and seen, it becomes very obvious that the majority of them are tailored to the audience. Maybe you're not making new work for that audience, but you're considering, who am I pitching to? What have they seen already? Mm-hmm. What kind of things are they used to? What would surprise and delight them? And you tweak and you fit, right? You right. fit it to every presentation.
Yeah. Yeah, we call that KYA, right? Know your audience.
Know your audience.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think those points, right, of knowing your audience, having a narrative, and landing on an ask are going to change the way that creatives will present their work.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So I think what you're getting at is, like, depending on who you present to or, like, what it is that you're speaking to, mm-hmm. your presentation does change. Yes. But in general, the 8 key points that I've pointed out are things that you need to cover at some point, perhaps not continuously in one presentation,
okay.
because you've already talked to this person, one of the stakeholders, about some of the points, and you only have like 10 minutes to capture,
yeah.
like to get a yes from them, right?
Right.
And so you skip through a bunch of things, but you have covered it at a prior point,
yeah.
right? Because no one will give you a yes unless they actually get all these points and they're confident. Ultimately, you're trying to build up confidence that you can do the job. Like, trust me to do this, and I'll get it done for you.
I love that. Maya, this has been really great. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. We're gonna be hearing from Los on his own for the next few weeks as well, because I'll be traveling away. Maya, before we go, is there any way that, you know, if somebody was inspired by what you said right now or wanted to ask you more questions, would you be okay with somebody contacting you? And if so, how?
Absolutely. Right now, I guess you can contact me through my
Tinder. Oh, what? What?
That would be an interesting medium, right? If you can find me on Tinder, yes. Please contact me through there. I'll give you extra bonus points.
We should do like portfolio pitches through Tinder.
That'd be a really interesting experiment. But you can find me easily through my website, mytrambot.com, or find me on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
Hit me up. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
Great. We'll have those links in the description of the show. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week.